This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined again by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we have three supporters for the show, the first being Jam Software, the second XMA, and finally our Patreon supporters. We'll tell you more about all of those as the show goes on. Bradley, how's it going?
Good. Today was our first day back at school, head in service, and I know I'm probably in the minority among our staff and probably the rest of the entire education world, but I love having an in-service day after a long break.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you on that. I think in-service is incredibly valuable when done well.
We had some meetings from like 9 to 11, and then we had the rest of the day just to get ready. And I'm a big fan of just like having time to get back into things. Like for example, like I had some things I wanted to bring into my office over Christmas break. Over the break, took them over there. I just like having that stuff done. I'm type A to a fault, to be honest with you. And so like having a day to come back, get settled, get questions answered, just get my bearings ready about getting back for students to come back is awesome. And so like, I feel like I'm ready for kids to come back tomorrow versus like, you know, you're coming in first day after being off for 2 weeks and it's like chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. Preparation is everything. I actually think the more I do it, the more I think about 90% of teaching is just preparation.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And that's why teaching, I think, in some ways gets easier the longer you do it, because mm-hmm. it's more repetitive. Like I always tell our new teachers that you're going to be exhausted for the first year. And it's when from year to year you keep doing the same thing over and over again, obviously with refinements, but you're not having to like reinvent your lesson plans every single year.
Yeah. Well, it's funny though, the way our school is in terms of time, we basically have been doing that for about 10 years now, because when the school started, it was sort of K through 8 or something like that maybe. And then in 2006, we hired enough teachers to start going through all the stages of school. And so what we did was we sort of developed all the existing exams that we did back in those days. And then just as we got done with that, all the exams changed. So we've been through another sort of 5-year phase of doing them all again. So a lot of our teachers are pretty burned out on development at the moment, and it's something we're just having to kind of take care of a little bit, is because we've actually not had, none of our secondary colleagues have really had a year where they've done entirely the same thing as they did last year, even still. And I think that we're still a year or two away from that being the case. So we're just trying to take care of people a little bit right now.
So here this week is episode 2 of our Deploy 2016 series. And we got some great feedback, even in the very few little time the episode 1's been out since we're recording this. We're recording this a little bit early. And so thanks, everybody, for that. And thanks to all the new Patreon subscribers. We'll take just a minute to mention that. But we mentioned that on the last show that, that you have a way to directly support Out of School Now through a Patreon donation. And we'll have a link to that on the show notes, where if we help you out in any way in your job or what you do, you can give us a couple dollars a month as a way to say thanks. And that helps us to pay the bills, and then just gives us extra money as well. So again, thanks to all of our Patreon supporters. It's awesome. It's kind of like, it was great to see kind of like the familiar names, the people that are continually interacting with us on Twitter are the first ones that gave. So that was awesome.
Yeah, that's always good to see people supporting you. It's very much appreciated.
So what's the topic for this week?
So Bradley, this is a topic that we did it under a slightly different title last time round, but the title we got for this week is What Makes a Tech-Friendly Head Teacher? And this was a topic that you were very interested in putting in, and I think I've certainly got some things to say about it as well, but I think we've all seen situations where school leadership is very strong, and we've seen situations where school leadership is weak. And I think, like I said before in the last show, doing a large deployment like this is one of the biggest things any school leader will ever do in their career. And it's something that can either go very well or very badly. And often I've seen situations where deployments have fallen apart has been because of weak leadership or the job being given to somebody who basically isn't a school leader, rather than because of technical problems or deployment issues. It's just the fact that nobody cared enough to really make it a priority for the school. And it's something that you see over and over again when you look at studies of school improvement as a whole. What it always comes back to is quality of leadership. And it's something that some countries do a better job than others of developing new school leaders. In Scotland, we have this new qualification called the Scottish Qualification for Headship, which is something that is optional at the moment, but might in the future become mandatory for school head teachers. And it is quite an academic kind of course. It's not necessarily a very hands-on thing, but it's nice to see people trying to recognise that school leadership is a different thing from just being a teacher. Because it's like so many situations in medicine, in sport, in lots of different places. The people who are good at being a practitioner often get promoted to be a manager of the same thing. And it's not at all obvious that just because you're a good classroom teacher means you're going to be a good school administrator. Now, sometimes that is absolutely the case, don't get me wrong, but sometimes it's not. And it's something that I think is very important to focus on the role of leadership right at the start of any project like this.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I think another analogy I've seen is you take the best salesman and you promote them to manager so they don't do any sales anymore. And they're a terrible manager, and then they're not using their best skill. And, you know, I equate a big technology rollout to actually building a school. You're just building it digitally. Because, you know, for example, like you just bought a bus at your school, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So when you're buying a bus, there's a few variables you're looking at, but you're largely buying a turnkey solution. Like, it's not like you're buying pieces to make a bus work. You're buying a bus.
Yeah, I spent most of my time trying to decide what text to put on the side of the bus, actually.
Yeah, so it's like, you have small details to work out, but largely the satisfaction with the bus is, does the bus work? When you turn the car on, does it crank? And if it does that, and it fits the number of people that everybody agreed on, then you're kind of good to go. And, you know, another example is like if you're, say, putting in new floors in your gym, you're putting in the floors. Like it's like you're not having to go chop down the wood, sand it and stain it and then install it. Like you're probably going to a company to buy floors from and probably they're installing it as well. So it's like these are simpler financial transactions where like building a school is a behemoth of a choice because like buying wood for the gym, you have 1,000 decisions to make.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something that is, just like a building, you can build a building and it can be 95% what you want, but there's 5% that you would do over again if you could or change if you could. And sometimes you can change, you can bring in, extra classrooms on the back of a truck or whatever and stick them on the side of the building. And I suppose a deployment of computers is kind of similar to that because in many ways, in many areas, there are things you can change after the fact. So over the course of our deployment, we've changed a couple of times the way that we deploy apps. We went from syncing through iTunes to using volume purchase codes to now using managed deployment through VPP. And these are sort of the evolving things that you can change as you go. It's a little bit of, taking down partition walls inside the building and so on. But then there are other parts of a deployment where it's like taking down a structural wall where things could potentially fall apart as you change it. So you have to be very careful to do that in a planned and controlled fashion and make sure that you get to where you want to be at the end of that process.
You know, there are things you think about, like when you're building a school, like think about the restrooms, for example. Like what kind of septic dispensers do you get? How high are they placed off the ground? Those are things that often visionary top-level people cannot even fathom those decisions. But someone's going to be thinking about those.
Yep. there's so many decisions to be made. And I think one of the things that is vitally important is making a distinction between what are those big, important decisions and what are the ones that you can sort of fairly delegate to people lower down the food chain, if you like. And I suppose in the example of a deployment, one of those things is what apps do we get? Now, that's a question that you could say, well, every app purchase has to go through the head teacher, right? That's a terrible way to do that, make that decision, because that's not something that the head teacher really has any insight into whether or not something is valuable or not, and neither should they be spending their time on that kind of thing. But then the question of can we buy paid apps or not, that's a head teacher question, because that actually has a major impact across the whole of the deployment. So you see there are different kinds of decisions to be made at different levels, and putting the responsibility for those decisions at the wrong level can be a real break on progress once your deployment's up and running.
Well, another one I should clarify, when we say like head teacher, head of school, principal, these are all interchangeable terms depending on what mm-hmm. region you're in. Like in certain parts of the U.S., it's headmaster, head of school, principal, and then, you know, other parts of the world, it's head teacher. So when we say that, it's all these terms are interchangeable. It's a great point about, like, can we buy paid apps? Or another one to think about that is going to come from the top is, who's responsible for when this iPad breaks? Like, what is the path we're taking down there? If this is not a BYOD, if this is a school provided iPad and it is broken at school or at home, either accident or negligence, who is responsible for that? So those are the kind of things we're thinking about. So before we get kind of in our list of these qualities of a tech friendly head of school, head teacher, let's thank our first sponsor of the night. It's the fine folks at XMA. XMA is a leading Apple solution expert for education. As an Apple solution expert, XMA is perfectly positioned to support your institution with the deployment of Macs and iPads. They have built upon their 30 years of experience to create a new program for the iPad called the All Learn program. With All Learn for iPad, XMA can help you with the planning, financing, and managing of your iPad deployment. They can also use their accredited trainers to deliver Apple professional development to teachers and staff to ensure they get the best results from your Apple products. To learn more about the All Learn program for iPad and XMA, you can visit them on the web, xma.co.uk, or you can follow them on Twitter at @WeAreXMA. Thanks to XMA for sponsoring Out of School this week. So I have been fortunate in my entire time in education to work for a very tech-friendly head of school. And that's largely – and I think there's one of two ways you can kind of discover what makes a tech-friendly head of school. You can work for one that is, or you can work for one that isn't.
Yes, exactly.
These are some of the qualities, I guess. You know, we'll run down through these that we'll talk about. The first thing for me is the headmaster has the ability to set the vision for the deployment. And we say set the vision, this is going to be for anything the school does, like major curriculum changes, like we building a new playground a few years ago. Like the headmaster set the vision for that. That was not something that a third grade teacher was driving. The headmaster is the one that drove it because it was a school-wide effort. And only that position has the ability to direct the focus of the school for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, the ability and the authority. You know, I've seen deployments, you know, or I've had, maybe not deployments, but I've certainly had visits from people who had been tasked with, you know, doing this deployment. the worst one I ever had was a newly qualified teacher who hadn't even been to the school yet, had already been given responsibility for rolling out iPads in her school. And this is somebody who knows basically nothing about teaching, nothing about classroom management, nothing about the school politics, nothing about the school itself, really, in terms of their experience. And yet somehow they had been given the responsibility for their entire rollout. And that's probably the worst example that I've ever seen, but there have been layers in between there. But the best times are when the head teacher comes to the school and they're really engaged with it and they see and they take back. I've told you before that we often have a delegation that come over from Denmark, and they always bring 25 to 30 head teachers and school education specialists who come, and it's always such a great and valuable time, both for us and for them, because we know that we're talking to people who are able to make decisions, people who have authority, and who can actually go home and make things happen. And that's always really encouraging for us to get that kind of visit as well.
Yeah, I get that question asked a lot, like when I have vendors call me. It's like, who else needs to be on this call that's going to be part of this decision process? I mean, the salespeople have learned the answer or learned the question to ask. You know, they don't want to spend their time talking to someone that ultimately can't make the decision. I read a quote once that applies to so many different aspects of leadership. It's by Antoine de Saint. How would you say that last word?
Exupéry.
Lived in the first half of the 20th century, and he once said, "If you want to build a ship, don't recruit people to gather wood, but give them a vision of the sea." And I think that to me sums up setting the vision. Is you describe where you're going to be. I mean, the journey on any kind of these paths is difficult, but it's like when you're building a school, what do they show you when they're building a school? They show you like artist rendering of what it's going to look like. They don't show you like all the pieces broken up. It's like when you're building a puzzle, what do they have on the outside of the box? The finished product. They don't show you like, here are 500 pieces that you'll never ever be able to get together. Like my son's starting to get into Legos, like the small Legos, not the big ones, like the Duplo Legos, which I kind of prefer those because they're not lost as easily. But, you know, on the outside of the package are these like intricate scenes. He's not old enough to really build those himself. So in reality, what this is turning into is dad is assembling his toys. He wants the finished truck. But, you know, I'm having to build them. So those things, you know, they don't show you on the outside of the Lego box, like, you know, the small little pieces. They're showing you the finished product. And that's the vision that the head of a tech-friendly head of school is going to do, is he's going to sell the vision of where you're going to be at. There's a lot of work in between, but you're selling the vision.
Yeah. And I think that also applies to anybody else who's in a leading role in a deployment, because this isn't just on the head teacher. It's also on, you know, the head of IT. It's on the principal teachers of departments who are involved in this. Anybody who is seen as being heavily involved in the deployment needs to be completely bought into the vision, but also sharing that vision with other people as well, and able to articulate it, you know. And that's, to me, that would be one criteria for putting people on the team. You know, if you're going to have a leading team or a, you know, a vanguard team or an explorer team or whatever kind of management phrase you want to use for what you call these people, but the people who are in the forefront of the deployment, they have to be the people who can explain to other people. And if you want to go back to our diffusion of innovations terminology, Bradley, you want to describe these people as the early adopters, not the innovators, right? They're those people who can link the ideas guys with the early and late majority people who will come along later necessarily, because that's the way they are. So it's important to select that team, not just for the most enthusiastic people, because then you're going to get the innovators on your team who can't communicate with the rest. You want to pick the people who can articulate your vision as well. Super important.
Well, we're going through strategic planning from our board level right now, board of our school, the trustees. And that's one of the things I think they're looking at is like, you know, what all do we each bring to the table in terms of like what are our experiences? And that helps the board to best utilize themselves to drive the vision of the school as well and to set the vision with the headmaster. Because if you just bring like the same type of people on board, you're just getting the same opinions. And so mm-hmm. you need to bring in people all along that adoption curve, and because they will have different questions and different concerns that will make you, you know, kind of think differently.
I'll say something else about the kind of composition of your leadership team, your project leadership team, is that if you can get somebody in your school who is recognized as a laggard and get them enthusiastic about your project, that is the biggest win that you can possibly get, because then everybody sees the project as an inevitability. If those people who are just hate everything and don't want to be involved in any new thing, if they're somehow vocally enthusiastic about your iPad project, that is incredibly influential, and it gets everybody on board much, much quicker than if you just kind of work through the normal phases of a diffusion program.
So next thing on the list is models behavior, or another way you can say this is they walk the walk. Mm-hmm. And this can be with any sort of technology. This can be with iPad. This can be with, you know, Macs. It can be Surfaces, whatever your deployment is. If you set the vision of what you're going to do, the person, the head of school, the headmaster, they must basically go all in. And so if you're saying, look, we're going all iPad all the time, that needs to be what the head of school does. And they need to be seen carrying it around using it. Because if you're saying, look, the iPad is what everybody's going to use but the administration team, that's signaling that you're getting a lesser device.
Yep. Yeah, and as people wonder often why I'm so into like using iOS as a primary computer, is because that's what I'm asking my students to do every day. And if I'm not prepared to do it, then I don't know if it's fair that I should be asking them to do it. But I know that I can use iOS day to day. And okay, I'm indeed doing much more advanced things than they are. There is a distinction there. But in general, if I'm not prepared to use an iPad 80-90% of my day in school, I'm going to ask them to use it 100%. Is that even ethical, really? If I'm, you know, ask yourself this: if you're going to deploy Kindle Fire tablets to your kids in school, would you use a Kindle Fire tablet every day? If you couldn't stand to use that device, I'm not at all sure that you should be deploying that device to students. And I think the same thing is true of a $100 Chromebook or, you know, a Windows tablet or whatever it is you're going to deploy. I think there is an ethical concern that I have, which is if I'm not prepared to use it, I'm not totally sure that I should be asking students to use it either, because it's not good enough for me, plus or minus the difference in tasks that we have to do, I'm pretty sure it's not good enough for them either.
I totally agree. I mean, again, it goes back to walk the walk. I mean, a simple thing is, like, we have ID badges at work that we're asked people to wear every day, that they are our access codes to the building where we can unlock them with our key fobs. The headmaster wears his every day without fail. Because if he's saying to everybody else, wear your fob, he needs to wear his fob.
Yeah, and this is one of the fundamental things, I think, about leadership as well, is that if you want to impose something on people, you know, even in the best possible sense, you should be prepared to have it imposed upon yourself as well. And I think it's just something that I feel personally is an important part of my ethics, is that if I want other people to do it, I should put up with it as well. So I take the same filtering as the kids take on the devices, for example. There's not a special unfiltered network for teachers, for example. That's also important. And if we can't stand to use the network, then I don't think we should ask the students to use it either. So that's another way in which we make sure that everybody sort of keeps us all honest. And I think often IT people are quite able to, you know, they get a special route to the internet that's, you know, faster and much less filtered than the one the kids get. But I think it's important to stay honest and use the same things that the kids are using every day.
I totally agree. Next thing on the list is commit to it.
Yeah, committing to something is really important. And I'll tell you why. It's because every teacher, like, for all the years they've been a teacher, have been accustomed to getting a multi-year payoff for any development work that a teacher does. So, for example, if you develop a new exam course, you expect, like we said earlier, to be able to roll that out for 10 or 15 years after you develop it, more or less the same. And quite honestly, you know, that I'm not saying that from the point of view that, isn't that disgraceful? Teachers are just, you know, cranking the handle every year. Realistically, that's the only way you can do the job of teaching. Because if you can't do that, then you are going to lose your mind every year with the number of students you have to get through courses and get through courses that you do earlier years of the school as well. And one of the things I think often torpedoes iPad experiments, if you like, I won't even dignify them with the term deployments, but when, you know, when schools sort of dabble around with iPad and they get some and they try it and they sort of ask, well, you know, what happened? How did we transform the school with these 10 iPads and there's 1,500 kids in the school? What's happening there is you're not committing to it enough that teachers will change what they do in response to it. And I think this is actually a critical early approach to computer deployments, is that you have to commit enough in the early stages that teachers believe you when you say, this is going to be a thing in our school. And I think by accident, this is something we got right in the early days. I never thought about this when we started, but the fact that we signed a 3-year lease in the first instance for our iPads meant that teachers knew they had at least 3 years of these devices being in school. And, you know, we set expectations correctly and we told them what we expected of them and so on. And we did all that part quite well. But I think one of the keys was saying, okay, it's 3 years. Here we go. And, you know, it's okay not to be great in the first year. It's okay not to be great in the second year, but we want to see progress all the way along. And committing to it, this is where leasing is important, I think. You know, you talked about BYOD, Bradley, and that's something where, you know, it has its attractions. I think they're mostly quite superficial, but if you commit to leasing something, there is a contract somewhere that says these devices will be here for 3 years and then they will change. There will be a refresh and so on and so on. And I think that's really important to give teachers confidence enough to spend time reworking some or all of their materials as you go through the deployment.
Before we move on, let's thank our final sponsor of the night. It's the great folks at Jamf Software. They provide IT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies in the classroom, such as Macs, iPads, iPhones, and even Apple TVs. They have a great app for teachers called Cast for Focus that allows teachers to take control of their classroom deployment from their own iPad. Cast for Focus allows teachers to quickly gain a student's attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select a specific Apple TV assigned to their class, choose and distribute iBooks, and even initiate AirPlay right from within Cast for Focus. Learn more about Cast for Focus, the Casper Suite, and Jamf Software at jampsoftware.com. That's J-A-M-F software.com. Thanks to Jamf Software for sponsoring Out of School this week. So, what's next on the list?
Next thing up is communicating and setting expectations. We kind of touched on this in the last segment we talked about, where we were talking about committing to the project. But being a communicator is, in some ways, that is the job of being a leader. I mean, what else is there apart from taking that vision and explaining it to people in a way that makes them want to do it for themselves as much as doing it for you? But there are so many, in a school community, there are so many people to communicate with that it's important that the leadership team, whether that be one or multiple people, are communicating as much as possible and as often as possible to as many people as possible. And I don't think you can over-communicate, Bradley. I don't know if that's I think that's your phrase I stole at some point. But you can't over-communicate what's going on to people. And, you know, sometimes I'm very guilty of saying, well, I told you that one time. Why can you not? Did you not remember what I said? But as I've done this kind of job more and more, I've realized that you've got to say it like 10 times before people even hear it the first time.
Yeah, I've kind of come around to that really since I've been a parent at our school, and knowing that, like, how I know a teacher saw those things and I'll just forget. Because the thing that you're saying, you feel like everybody should know because you're saying it.
Yeah.
But to other people, they've got their own things they want to say. And, you know, when I'm, you know, busy at work and, you know, get an email from a teacher, hey, don't forget, 3 weeks from now, we need this. What do? Delete. And then I'll remember that. And then I don't. And then it's like they say, well, we sent an email out 3 weeks ago. You know, and you've got to do more follow-up than that. It's just, it is what it is. In a perfect world, you would tell somebody something one time and they would never forget it. But everybody's got their own thing that they're worried about. And so you kind of, if you need people to know it, then you got to really communicate it. And for me, this communicates and sets expectations. It's kind of the one of the key differences, other than being the person in charge, ultimately, of a teacher versus a head of school or a head teacher. Being mm-hmm. able to discover, communicate, and set expectations, and then hold people to them. Like, that's leadership. That's why you're in that role. That's why you're not in the classroom.
Yeah, and I think it's something that you're right. It marks out the able leader from the less able leader, is that they are willing to go out and communicate, and also they're able to sort of empathize with other people. And what I mean by that is that leads you to be able to anticipate what people are going to think when you say blah, 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 blah. And sometimes I've been to situations where people, I've been in, you know, what do you call them? Parents' evenings is the phrase I'm looking for, where people are trying to present their iPad program and they say something, and there's just like a murmur across the hall of just complete horror at what they've just said. You know, like, we're going to just have you guys buy an iPad for your kids. And people are just like freaking out, you know. And like, how did you not know that that was going to feel weird to those parents? You know, and it's like that kind of empathizing and setting people's expectations. And again, around things like breakage as well, Bradley, clearly anticipating what questions people are going to ask and having an answer in place for when they do ask it. Doesn't mean you have to tell them everything in advance, but sometimes you will. But other times you just want to know that I've thought about the breakage situation, the loss situation, blah, 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 and here's what I'm going to say to parents when that happens.
And this is one of the things, too, that gets a lot easier the more deployments you do.
Yeah.
Even at your own school, or if you've gone to a different school, you kind of been asked those questions before, and they don't change a ton from kind of year to year, cycle to cycle.
Not really, no. And it's only every so often when something new comes along that you might get new questions. For example, you know, with the invention of Touch ID, suddenly you might be getting asked questions about, you know, biometric security or something like that, or what's happening with our kids' fingerprints, or a question like that. But very often the questions are pretty much the same everywhere. You know, all parents want to know the same things. What happens if it gets broken? What happens if it gets lost? So on and so on and so on. So things like, you know, having... anticipating some of those questions and having an answer prepared for them is always useful. And I think in future shows we'll talk a little bit more about what those questions might be in some detail and what you need to think about them.
Next thing on the list is a willingness to fail. I'm kind of working through this, like with my own son that's 5-year-old. Like, he got a bike for Christmas. It's got training wheels on it, but like teaching him that things are difficult and anything great is going to be difficult. And you're going to not do it, you're not going to be perfect the first time around. And so bringing that back into kind of the school mindset, there are going to be times, like if you've rolled out a new Wi-Fi deployment, there may be some bumps along the way on like trying to figure out how to optimize it. And, you know, and not having a head of school that expects perfection is, I think, essential, because let's face it, technology is not perfect. It's really not. A perfect example of something we had happen this past weekend is our headmaster was out of town, and he sent an email from obviously a unique IP address that's not known by Google to like our all staff group. Well, it didn't go out, and so like he sent it out, I guess, January 1st. Like January 2nd, he's texting me saying, "Hey, like nobody got this email I sent. I asking people about it. Like, you know, where's it at?" So I did some digging and like. So this is sent mail. So I went to if you create a group in Google, there's actually like a web interface that shows like all the messages posted to it. Well, it was flagged as spam. I imagine because he was on IMAP, so it was like a mail client, and he was on a different IP address. So it's like almost like a fraud thing. And so I processed it, marked his address, you know, whitelisted it so it wouldn't happen in the future. Like, he didn't screw with me saying, like, it's got to be perfect 100% of the time. I mean, he knows that these things are not perfect. And technology is, in a lot of ways, it's like, you've ever seen those, like, Nerf bow and arrows? Mm-hmm. I think technology is like trying to shoot those through open doors and moving trains. Sometimes you're going to hit it, and then sometimes you're not.
Yeah. I mean, I think the key mindset here for a school leader is that technology is like your school building. It's not like your minibus. So if I was to go out and, you know, my job was to get a 17-seater minibus, and if I come back with a 14-seater minibus, that is a straightforward failure on my part. And it's an irredeemable failure, and I've signed a 5-year contract for the wrong thing, and I've really screwed up. And that kind of failure is not acceptable. And I think that, you know, too often schools are failing at that level with technology. But if you start to look at technology more like, we're building a house here, then okay, you know, my back deck isn't in the best condition because it's winter and it's a bit green and slimy right now, but I'll clean that up in the summer and that'll be fine. And your technology deployment's a little bit like that, because okay, the Wi-Fi might be a little bit rough, or we don't have all the apps we need right now, but we can get them in a week. You know, it's an evolving thing rather than just a yes or no. But I think one of the things I continually end up frustrated with is that there are too many schools where like the whole deployment just is a failure. And it's not that it couldn't be made to work, but the problem is that people sort of get into this mindset where they decide that this is the shape of our deployment and that's what we're going to do and we're not going to change it. Now, one of the problems with that is that it is costly to change, both in terms of PR. It's costly in terms of, you know, the hit on your apparent competence. If you have to tear down a deployment and start again halfway through a school year, you do look like a bit of an idiot. But maybe better that than going through a 3-year cycle where your deployment just doesn't work. And I think that we've got to get into a mindset of continual improvement of technology deployments, not just we're buying this one thing and oh, that didn't work, therefore we'll just not do any of it. But you got to work on it. You got to work on it again. You got to work on it again. Every year, you've got to change something, improve something, design your MDM structures better, deploy your apps faster, change the position of your Wi-Fi base station to work better. Whatever it is your problem, they can be fixed. Sometimes you got to, you know, tear in a wall and start again. Other times, it's just a coat of paint and it's fine. But I want people to get out of the mindset of thinking, we go to a vendor, we buy a bunch of stuff, and it either works or doesn't. And if it's not perfect on the first day, then we're never using it again. That's the leadership part, I think, isn't it? You know, you're sailing across the Pacific or whatever, and, you know, the boat isn't in perfect condition. Well, are you going to fix the boat, or are you just going to scuttle it halfway between the USA and Japan? What are you going to do? I'm not going to scuttle the boat just for the sake of one or two things that are wrong.
Failures should be opportunities for growth and for learning, and not just failure for the sake of failure, but you should be learning from every little failure along the way.
Yeah, and also the resilience aspect as well, that failures need not be catastrophic, right? I've been to schools where, you know, they've got iPads and the Wi-Fi is not up to scratch. And what you see sometimes is, okay, we're going to get new Wi-Fi. And in other schools you see, oh, well, we're just not going to use the iPads because the Wi-Fi doesn't work very well. And it's that difference in mindset between resilience and, you know, early failure or giving up too early. And I think it's that nuance that marks out the great leader from the merely competent leader, I think, or perhaps not even competent leader in the case of people who are willing to throw away, you know, multiple tens of thousands of pounds worth of computer gear just because one thing doesn't work perfectly the first time they try it.
Next thing on the list is a willingness to see past the device. And obviously you and I have our opinions about what devices are great, mm-hmm. but devices are devices and they're ultimately tools. And so part of the vision is selling the end result, not selling we're buying iPads or we're buying Chromebooks. And so decide what you're wanting in that vision. Say, okay, what kind of devices do we need? Are we looking for the full web with a hardware keyboard? Are we looking for a device that does great collaboration? Are we looking at a device that does great creativity? Decide those things first and then work down your device. So you're not coming and saying, okay, guys, we're doing, we're going to do an iPad deployment. We're doing a Chrome OS deployment. Come to that realization after some soul searching and some goal discussing.
Yeah, but with the realization that you can't have everything. And I think this is something that, and this is often the best teachers get into this rut, which is that they can see the benefit to learning in everything they look at. And I love that quality about a great teacher, but it can be paralyzing when it comes to technology. Because you see people who do this, they go to a big show like ISTE or BET, and they see everything. They see a 3D printer, they see a Chromebook, they see an Android tablet, they see an iPad, they see, you know, a clicker system, and they can think of ways that they can use all of these things in the classroom. And that's a great mentality to have in a world where you're talking about little knickknacks that you pick up for very little money, and you can actually possibly have all of them in your classroom, you know, this set of stickers, that book, whatever. But when you're talking about, you know, the second largest project a school can possibly do, apart from building another one, you just can't have that mentality. You've got to be tempered by the reality of finance, of deployment, of management, of ongoing cost as well. And I think you're absolutely right to say that it's not about the device, but I often hear people use that phrase. I mean, that phrase is very common in education, is it's not about the device. But too often what that means, or what people mean when they say that, is I don't want to have a technical discussion about computers and their relative benefits. I just want to be a teacher. And that's great, but somebody's got to have that discussion about the device. And you're right to say, start with a higher level goal than just, I want iPads in my school, because I've seen that happen, and that's no good either. Just being an iPad fanboy, who cares? But there's got to be somebody selling the educational vision, but there's got to be somebody taking care of business down at the lowest level as well. And you're right to bring this in for the leadership aspect. And the rest of the series, I think, will be about taking care of the business so that your boss looks amazing when your iPad deployment rolls out perfectly and your Wi-Fi works and all your apps come out and everything is great. But we're about to show you in the next few episodes how much is involved in getting to that point. And I think this is the key understanding, is it's not just about the learning either. It's about all of these things together. But willingness to see past the device at a leadership level, absolutely important.
Next thing and final thing on the list is willingness to hire great people and leave them alone. You know, this, I'm not a big fan of micromanagers. And I think any tech-friendly head of school can't be so involved in those low-level decisions of a deployment that they're really wasting their time. There's a quote from Steve Jobs he made years and years ago, and he said, "I noticed that the dynamic range between what an average person could accomplish and what the best person could accomplish was 50 or 100 to 1. Given that, you're well advised to go after the cream of the crop. A small team of A-plus players can run circles around a giant team of B and C players." So, you know, you hire the best people and get out of the way. If you trust your IT staff, if you trust your folks on your project management team, just let them do their thing.
Yep. And again, hiring people with a good track record is something that you can now do in iOS deployments. 5-6 years ago, that wasn't something anybody had. You know, nobody had 5 years experience in iPad deployments in 2011. But now there are people who are able to do that kind of thing. And there are vendors who have a good track record, and there are vendors who do not have a good track record. And that's something that you can look at as well. And you can use, you have references to use to say, okay, well, tell me what other schools you've deployed with. Go and talk to those schools before you make your decision on your vendor, for example. And that's the kind of thing a leader needs to be doing, is actively trying to identify who those best people are. You know, Steve Jobs often said that his job is to hire other good people. Yeah, and that was what the leader did. And who can deny that over the course of the 2000s that he hired some really great people to do some really great jobs at Apple, and it's worked out very well for them.
So kind of in conclusion, I don't think a deployment is easily successful without a person like this at the top of the school. Just as it's difficult to pull off any large project without strong administration and administrative staff at your school. We were talking this morning, one of the main jobs of a head of school and a board of trustees is to ensure that the school is open 10 years from now. And those things they just don't happen. I mean, schools are not, you're continually losing customers on purpose. if you really think about it. Yeah. The people graduate and you have to replace, you have to re-enroll at least the same number of kids that you're losing every year. Otherwise you're going backwards. And these qualities I think are essential to a great headmaster in 2016. I don't think you can just ignore this aspect of your job as a headmaster and be the best you can be at this day and age.
No, I completely agree. And it's important that, you know, I think often a major project like an iPad deployment can sort of take over a school. And it can be, and perhaps should be, right? For a few years, it should be the main focus of your school development program. Because otherwise, it's not going to have the weight behind it. It's not going to have the cachet. It's not going to have the focus that it needs to have to get embedded. But here's the game. Eventually, you've got to take your foot off that pedal and put your foot on a different pedal. Because you cannot keep being the iPad school forever, right? And for us, you know, we spent 3 years, the years between 2010 and 2013, being the iPad school. And I'm very grateful that that happened, and it was great for the school, it was great for me personally, it was great for a lot of the staff who got involved with a lot of great things there. But now, we're not focused on the iPad anymore. The iPad is just a normal part of our school, and we're focused on exams, we're focused on, you know, early secondary development, we're focused on a whole school maths program that we're working on, we're doing more drama things again, there's an art exhibition happening next year, blah, 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 blah. We're now back to the normal wide run of things that school does, but we're doing it at a much higher level now. Because we jacked up the building, if you like, and we put in a whole new foundation, which was technology. And then we're off and running again. And I think that's key for a leader, is that there's a time to focus on one project and there's a time to move on. And what happens when you don't move on is you become very much stuck in a rut of, well, we're only doing this one thing. And it's time. It often comes time to move on, and it's very important to recognize when that happens as well.
I think that's a great place to leave it for this week. Thanks to everyone for tuning in this week. Again, this is part two of our Deploy 16 series, Deploy 2016. Mm-hmm. If you missed last week, you definitely want to go back and listen. We talked about kind of what's changed since 2014. Went through the outline and kind of just laid out, you know, where this show's going, what we hope to accomplish with it. But again, on Twitter, use the hashtag #Deploy16 for any questions. Next week, we're going to be talking about what drives the reasons to deploy. So that'll be a fun one again. So if this is your first episode on the series, definitely check out last week's at outofschool.net. You can subscribe to the show in iTunes or any major podcast app. If you're using iTunes or the podcast app on iOS, you can go to itunes.com/outofschool. We always appreciate reviews in iTunes. That helps new people find the show, or if they come across it, maybe helps them subscribe if they wouldn't have. I am on Twitter at Bradley Chambers, and I'm on the web at chambersdaily.com.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web.
You can follow along with with this series on our website at outofschool.net/deploy2016, outofschool.net/deploy2016. There we'll have detailed write-ups of each show with links to the show and questions. So if you're sending this to a colleague, hey, check this out, follow along. This is a dedicated show for them. Thanks again to our sponsors, Jamp Software and XMA. You can learn more about them at outofschool.net or in the notes of your podcast app. And again, if you want to support the show, you can do that by going to our Patreon page. It's patreon.com/outofschool, or we have a link to that at the navigation function of our website. Thanks, everybody, for listening this week, and we'll be back next week.